This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show, back this Tuesday with another 60 minutes of radio drama. We'll start off this time with Big Town and their episode from January 25th, 1949, titled Fatal Fix. After that, it's a Columbia Workshop in Coles to Newcastle, their episode from February 1st, 1940.
Lever Brothers Company, makers of Life Boy Health Soap, present Big Town.
Extra, extra, extra! Here's Steve Wilson in Sports Racket Exposé. Big Town gambler slain in the fatal fix. Extra, extra!
Yes, Lever Brothers Company, makers of Life Boy Health Soap, are proud to present Big Town. The story of fighting editor Steve Wilson of the Illustrated Press, whose newspaper creed stands for freedom and justice against the forces of intolerance and evil.
The power and the freedom of the press is a flaming sword. That it may be a faithful servant of all the people, use it justly, hold it high, guard it well.
Now to Big Town and Steve Wilson's headline racket exposé, captioned The Fatal Fix. Baseball, basketball, boxing, the racetrack have become big business, big money. And when professional gamblers move in, sportsmanship is out. And such is the case in the fatal fix that began, insofar as Steve Wilson was concerned, on an abandoned coal dock on the waterfront of Big Town.
Pass up, Cleo. You've had your milk. Go catch yourself a rat. Pass up, Cleo. Somebody just drove out on the dock. I'm going to blow out the candle.
They ain't coming to our shanty boat. You and me don't know nobody that owns a car except our friend Mr. Wilson of the press.
Cleo! Somebody's getting murdered. You stay in the shanty. I'm going to sneak up on the dock and see what's happened. Because the cops blame us for anything that happens on this old dock. Golly, the car's going away.
But something happened. Something awful happened.
Help, somebody. Help, somebody help me.
Lady, I ain't nobody much, but I'll help you. What happened?
He hit me. He cut my face with a knife. Help me.
Oh, sure. Lean on me, lady. I'll help you into my shanty boat.
No. I got away from him out of the car, but he'll come back. Kill me. They gotta kill me.
Who's gotta kill you?
I know too much about the fix.
What fix?
The bribes, the game, the big game. They're gonna miss shots and fix the score. They'll come back.
Oh, then I better get you out of here.
I got no place to go. They'll find me.
No, they won't, lady. I know a newspaper fella that'll know what to do.
A newspaper man? Well, he'll kill me if I talk to the newspapers.
No, they won't. My friend, Mr. Wilson, will get them before they get you. Now, come on, lady. I'll help you to a place where we can phone him right away.
Yeah.
Brad?
Yeah.
It's me, Chef.
So what?
Lola got away.
You dope.
But she ain't got far.
Get her or you'll get it.
Okay. She's on a coal dock with an old river rat named Willie the Weep.
Get her and clam him.
I marked her. She's plenty scared. Maybe she'll stay clamped.
Bring her here and we'll find out.
What if she won't come, Brad?
If she won't play, finish marking her up and dunk her deep.
Got a minute?
Always for you, Lorelei. Come in.
Thanks. Will you take a look at this safe driving material?
Sure thing. How's that lead article coming?
Well, here it is.
Uh-huh. Death at the wheel. Good.
The Safety Council has given us the latest figures.
Fine, but figures don't scare people enough, Lorelei.
Well, they need to be scared out of their wits.
No, into using their wits, realizing that any careless driver is asking for a fatal accident.
I've hammered on that with a few well-chosen incidents.
Yeah, so I see. Well, Lead off with this and make it a series.
Your private line to your listening post and the friend to the so-called underworld.
Yes, I'm expecting a new tip on that numbers racket murder last week. Hello, Steve Wilson, Illustrated Press.
Mr. Wilson, it's me, Willie the Wee.
Oh, hello, Willie. How's everything along the waterfront?
Something awful just happened on the old coal dock alongside my shanty boat.
What happened, Willie?
Somebody almost killed a girl.
Good grief. Let's have it, Willie. Fast. Now, wait a minute, Willie. Not quite so fast. Where is she, Willie?
Hiding in an alley, outside the dog wagon I'm phoning from. She's afraid the fellow will come back and finish killing her.
Is she badly wounded?
No, just cut on the face and kind of dizzy from being hit on the head.
What's back of it, Willie?
It's some kind of a racket.
Racket?
She knows too much. She's afraid to go home. I said you'd help her, but she's scared of everybody.
I'll hang up and get back to her, Willie. She may try to get away from you and hide. I'll take her to Mozart's Harbor Cafe. It's only a couple of blocks from where you are, Willie.
Okay, Mr. Wilson. Are you coming down?
Yes, with Miss Kilburn. We'll be there in 10 minutes. Get going, Willie. Don't let that girl get away.
Thus, Steve Wilson moves into a situation promising dangerous complications. And for the exciting developments in this fatal fix, we'll return to Big Town in a moment. Lifebuoy, get skin cleaner.
Lifebuoy, get skin cleaner.
Lifebuoy, with its purifying ingredient, get skin cleaner, stops B.O. as no other leading soap can. Here's what the doctors proved in 820 scientific tests.
People took daily baths with different soaps. Doctors found that Lifebuoy does more than just remove the grime and perspiration you can see. Lifebuoy is more effective than any other leading soap against the invisible dirt you never see. Doctors say that Lifebuoy's purifying ingredient makes the difference. And it makes Lifebuoy milder, too.
Yes, safe even for babies' tender skin.
No wonder Lifebuoy today is used in the homes of 40 million Americans. They like its mildness, its rich lather, its greater protection. Lifebuoy gets skin cleaner.
Lifebuoy gets skin cleaner.
Lifebuoy gets skin cleaner. Stops B.O. as no other leading soap can. So bathe with Lifebuoy every day. Get the big new bath size. Buy Lifebuoy right away. Now back to Big Town and Steve Wilson's story of the fatal fix. Acting on a gang violence tip, Steve is on his way to Mozart's Harbor Cafe. But meanwhile, Willie the Weep is trying to lead the victim, a young girl, along a dark street to Mozart's place.
Come on, Brady. My friend, Mr. Wilson's going to meet us at Mozart's Harbor Cafe and help you.
No. If I talk to the newspapers, they'll find me and kill me sure next time. Let me go, please, Mr. Wilson.
No, lady, you're all cut up and bleeding. Mozart will fix you up, and Mr. Wilson will see nothing more happen to you.
No, they'll find me and kill me.
They was gonna anyway. They will anyhow. Please, lady, come on. It's only about a block to Mozart.
All right, but... That car. Let me go.
It's no use. You're too sick to run away.
It's him. Shiv.
Yeah, Lola, baby. Come on, get in the car. The boss wants to see you.
You keep away from this lady. You let her alone.
Well, listen to who's talking.
You put away that knife and leave this lady alone.
And listen to who's giving orders.
Leave him alone, Shiv. He was just trying to help me. He don't know nothing. I'll go with you. I can't help myself.
Sure, Lola. You're going to see the boss and tell him you've learned your lesson. Now get in the car while I learn this stumble bum his lesson.
Let me go, Shiv.
Shut up.
You let that lady alone.
Oh, so you want to play rough, huh? Okay, brass knucks will do for you.
Boss, Miss Kilbine.
Say it, Harry, but watch your driving. I'm doing a feature series on reckless drivers, and it wouldn't look good if I were involved in even a minor accident.
Oh, fear not, Miss Kilbine. I am well aware of the fact that auto manufacturers have been able to foolproof everything on a car but the nut at the wheel and drive accordingly. Mozart's joint coming up.
Pull up and stop, Harry. But wait for us. That girl might be seriously cut up, and we may have to rush her to a hospital.
Check, boss. And I will keep my trusty Naganaka handy in case the mug that mocked us should show up to do an encore.
Do that, Harry. There's something ugly back of this. Come on, Lola.
Right with you, Steve. My nurse's aid training may come in handy if Mozart hasn't been able to patch up that gal's face.
Yes, and that face slashing trademarks this as gang vengeance or a final warning. Let's go in the side door. They probably got the girl in the back room.
If Willie was able to persuade her to come here.
Well, Mozart is in the back. I hear him beating out the blues.
Yeah, that's odd. Let's go in.
Yes. Good grief, he's alone.
Oh, Willie and the girl aren't here.
They've had time enough. Mozart.
Oh, Steve. Lorelei. What brings you down to the waterfront?
To meet Willie the Waif.
Willie?
Yes, Mozart. He found a girl beaten up on the dock near his shanty. Phoned me, and I asked him to bring her here.
Well, I haven't showed. I've been here practicing one-handed harmonies in case I never get this busted wing out of its sling.
Oh, how is your wounded shoulder, Mozart?
I'll live. But Willie's not showing. Don't look good.
Well, it's 15 minutes since he phoned me from a dog wagon only 3 blocks from here.
Well, he said the girl was afraid to talk to the newspapers. Maybe she wouldn't come, Steve, and got away from him.
Well, I was taken away from him by the slug who cut her up. Stay here, Lorelei. I'll get Harry, and we'll scout the streets between here and the cold.
Mozart!
Willie!
Mr. Wilson!
Oh, Steve, he's been beaten up.
Willie, what's happened? Here, man, let me help you. Sit down. Sit down. You're out on your feet.
He got her, Mr. Wilson. I couldn't stop him. I tried, but he had brass knuckles, and he beat me.
Now, take it easy, Willie. I'm sure you did your best.
Mozart, get me a wet cloth, quick.
Yeah, sure, Lorelei. And I'll get him a slug or something.
She tried to keep him from beating me up, Mr. Wilson. Said she'd go with him to see a guy he called the boss.
Steve, that means there's still time to do something.
Willie, did she give you any clue as to who these men are? What racket they're in?
Yeah, gambling.
Gambling? What kind?
Something to do with a fix.
A fix?
Games. Fixing the score. Missing shots.
Steve, haven't there been rumors of a gambling fix in the basketball league?
Yes, and this girl may have been a contact, Lorelei, or knew too much.
She called the fella Shiv.
Shiv, the knife. Probably a goon boy for the gang. Did she mention someone else?
No, but he's taken her to the boss to see if she's learned her lesson.
I wonder if she has, and which lesson.
Well, either way, she's marked for elimination, sooner or later.
Well, sooner or later could both be tonight. What can we do, Steve?
Play a long shot, Lorelei. There's no time for anything else.
How do we play it?
Most of the gamblers operate out of the old Grand Hotel.
Golly, yes, and what do you know, Joe? The night clerk knows every two- and four-legged rat in the place.
Here's a wet cloth, oh. Lorelei, and a slug of grape juice, Willie.
Grape juice?
Don't worry, Willie. It's been distilled. You'll never taste the grapes. Now, drink it down.
And hold still, Willie. I'll wipe the dirt out of those cuts.
All right, Miss Kilburn. But could I have a little more of the grape juice, Mozart?
Sure thing, Willie.
Hold still, Willie. Are you going to phone? What do you know, Joe, Steve?
No, I'm going over there, Lorelei.
Wait a minute, and I'll go with you.
No, Lorelei. Patch up Willie. I'll take Harry. And if my hunch is right, I'll ring in Inspector Callahan of Homicide.
Room service, old Grand Hotel.
Young man, get me the management.
Lady, I'm all the management there is this time of night. What's the beef?
Beef?
Squawk, York, or what have you.
Someone has a horse in the room next to mine.
A horse? Now, lady.
Two horses, sir, galloping round the room.
Hey, you're in 7-9, ain't you?
Well, what's that got to do with those horses?
Plenty, lady. Them ain't horses.
What are they?
Two bookies reenacting a dead heat at Hialeah.
Are you crazy?
Yeah, or I wouldn't be working in this dump. Relax, lady. They'll sleep it off just as soon as they finish the race.
Hello, Joe. You having trouble with the old Grand inmates?
Oh, hiya, Mr. Wilson. Nothing special. What brings you to this AC-Ducey joint this time AM?
Something very special, Joe. Could you stick your neck out long enough to give me a little information on a couple of your big-time gamblers?
Well, I don't know, Mr. Wilson. I ain't carrying much insurance. But then I ain't got any dependents.
Well, you won't have to show in this, Joe.
I wouldn't be any more use to you for tips if I did. Will it be?
A girl in the middle of a sports fix.
Uh-oh. Don't they ever learn?
She's had one lesson, Joe, that left her beaten up and marked with a knife. Willie the Weep found her and called me. But they took her away from Willie, beat him up, and took her back to school for another lesson.
Uh-huh. Who's the teacher?
I don't know, but his knife boy goes by the appropriate name of Shiv.
Shiv?
Yes.
Brad Keller's goon.
Keller, the promoter. What do you know, Joe? What do you know? How much do you know?
Too much for my own good.
Keller has a room here, hasn't he?
Yeah, the bridal suite. And the shiv came in with a beat-up gal about 10 minutes ago.
10 minutes ago?
Yeah. Said she got nicked by a truck.
Where's that bridal suite, Joe?
Top floor. But look, Mr. Wilson, them ain't honeymooners up there.
Send me a passkey, Joe.
You ain't going up there alone.
No, Harry's outside.
Look, that hacky's monkey wrench is no good against rods, and you'll never carry one.
Well, let's leave the guns to the police, Joe. Oh, phone Inspector Callahan of homicide.
Homicide? You figure there's going to be another murder in this joint?
Well, if it isn't headed off, now get Callahan on the double.
Okay, I only hope you know what you're doing, Mr. Wilson.
Just trying to prevent a murder, Joe. How about that passkey?
Okay, Mr. Wilson. Here you are.
Thanks very much, Joe. Till you're better paid.
Ah, don't mention it. Only don't forget that key'll open just about any door, including your size meat box in the morgue.
Say, boss, how come we are hoofing it up these back stairs?
Well, I'd rather not advertise our arrival on the floor outside Keller's suite, Harry.
Yeah, and that rickety elevator would sure proclaim our proximity.
That's right. And this is it. Now listen carefully.
I'm all ears, boss, and I got my trusty monkey wrench ready, willing, and able.
Well, just keep it ready, but keep quiet, Harry. And let's hope we can wait until Inspector Callahan and his homicide boys get here.
Okay, but are we going to just wait here at the head of the stairs?
No, Harry, I want you to stay here, out of sight, and watch the hall. If anyone comes up, follow them. Just that and nothing more.
Jack, boss, but whilst while you will be doing what?
Here's my plan, Harry. What do you know, Joe gave me a passkey and a sketch of the layout of Keller's suite. There are two entrances. One to the bedroom down at the end of the hall.
You going in there before Callahan gets here?
Yes, Keller and his knife boy and the girl should be in the front room. I want to hear what they're talking about. Get the lowdown on this sports fix. Who's involved? And be as close as possible in case there's any more trouble in store for that girl.
That is a pretty large order, boss, and a precarious preoccupation, which you'd better exercise extreme caution, as the saying goes.
I will, Harry. And I'm going to keep out of it until Callahan arrives, unless they start to work on that girl again.
Even so, you have not got any gun, and it is liable to end up with them working on you. So how about borrowing my trusty knock-a-knock in case of contingencies?
No, Harry. If this turns into a slugfest, someone is liable to get killed.
Okay, boss. I'll be here waiting for a call if you need me. Just make sure that somebody getting killed ain't you.
Snap out of it, Lola. Listen to me.
Don't, Brad. I won't talk. I swear I won't.
She's lying, Brad. I got a notion she talked her head off to that mooching stumble bum Willie to wait.
I didn't. I swear I didn't.
I spotted him coming out of a dog wagon near the dock. He must have phoned somebody. He was taking her someplace when I caught up with him.
Shut up, Shiv. Stop running off at the mouth. You messed this play up, but good.
Oh, what do you mean? You told me to...
I told you to throw a scare at her.
I tried just talking, but she wouldn't listen. She tried to jump out of the car.
So you mark her up so the cops will grill her till she talks if they spot her and pick her up.
I won't talk. I won't tell what I know. I promise.
Don't buy that, boss. She's seen me beat up that dope bully to weep. If she squawks, I go back to the pen for keeps with my record.
Shut up and quit thinking about yourself, Shiv. You muff this play and you deserve anything you get.
You'll get a piece of anything I get.
Listen, you rat. Listen, don't threaten me. If you're picked up for that work on Willie the Weep and you drag my name into it, you won't be safe in solitary. Now shut up while I tell Lola how it's going to be.
Okay. Okay, tell her.
Now listen, Lola, get it straight. I'm only going to tell you once.
I'm listening, Brad.
You got in this deal with your eyes open. You played the come on to them dribble pusses and hoop artists. Primed them for the payoff to throw some key games so my syndicate could lay plenty of long, odd bets and make a killer.
Well, I couldn't help it if they went to the prosecutor.
No, but you could beat it out of town like you were told.
I was hiding in a girlfriend's apartment. That's where Shiv found me.
I'll say I did.
And the cops would have found you if Shiv hadn't got you first.
I wouldn't have talked.
We're going to make sure of that, Lola.
How?
You're going to go on a little trip with Shiv.
No, please, Brad, not with Shiv. Let me go alone. I'll get out of town. I'll stay out of big town. I'll hide.
That chance with that cut-up kisser.
Well, that's your fault.
That was for scratching and biting me, your lippy twisting. For 2 cents I'd give you.
Lay off, Shiv. Get ready to ride.
Where's he taking me, Brad?
To a place out of town where the cops won't bother you and nobody will see that face of yours. Come on, get going.
Wait, Brad, please. Let me go fix my face. We might be stopped on the way and I look a mess.
Yeah, Maybe you better go wash your face and put some adhesive on that cut on your cheek. Go with the shift.
No, please, I can do it.
What? And maybe get an idea to slip out the hall door of the bedroom? Nothing doing. Go along with her, Shiv.
Okay. Come on, baby. You're no funny business, or I'll mark you up so you'll need a couple of yards of tape.
Put away that knife and just see she don't break for that hall door or get near no windows and jump.
Okay, Brad.
Come on, baby. Hurry it up. Get her ready and out of here. I'll phone the boys to take plenty of bets of the big game tomorrow night. Hey, Joe, get me long distance.
Come on, Toots, and let's not have any more trouble.
Let go of my arm. I hate you, you dirty little rat.
Oh, yeah? Maybe I'll give you a real reason when we get where we're going. In the bedroom. Now, wait till I snap on the light. Hey, you, don't be dame. You close that door.
No, I didn't.
Now, shut up, or I'll press your windpipe in your spine, you filthy little rat. Come here, miss.
Who are you?
Never mind. Snap on the light, quick.
Don't let him cry out. Keller's in the next room on the phone.
I know. I've been listening. Snap on the light.
Be careful. He has a knife.
He had a knife? There. Pick it up off the floor. Get out of here. The hall door.
What are you going to do?
Bring this knife-slinging slug along as Exhibit A.
Shiv, what's the idea of closing this door? You... Get away from that hall door, Lola. Let go of my boy, mister.
All right, Keller. That gun makes him all yours for the moment.
Wilson, the racket-busting newsie.
Yes, and it looks like I came to the right place.
You're gonna wish you hadn't. Come here, Lola. Give Shiv his knife.
I didn't fix this fix, Brad. I didn't know he was in here. I wasn't gonna talk.
I'll get to you, baby. Give Shiv his knife.
Yeah, baby. Give me that carver. Looks like the sticker's got work to do.
Thus, the tables have been turned on Steve Wilson, and for the exciting payoff, we'll return to Big Town in just a moment. Doctors have proved it. Lifebuoy, with its purifying ingredient, gets skin cleaner, stops B.O. as no other leading soap can. People took daily baths with different soaps. Doctors compared the results. They found that no other leading soap cleansed and protected as well as Lifebuoy. For Lifebuoy, with its purifying ingredient, is more effective than any other leading soap against the invisible dirt that forms a foothold for B.O. And Lifebuoy is milder, too. So enjoy a refreshing Lifebuoy bath every day. Buy Lifebuoy right away. Now, back to Steve Wilson and the Gambler's headquarters at the Old Grand Hotel in tonight's racket expose headlined, The Fatal Fix.
Come on, Wilson. How did you get wise to our big fix?
Talk. Yeah, Wilson, talk.
Tell your goon boy to take the tip of his knife away from my throat and I'll tell you anything you want to know, Keller.
Talk or I'll split your apple for trying to bust mine.
Back up, Shiv. I want to know how much this nosy newsy knows and who else knows.
The public prosecutor knows plenty,
Maybe
Keller.
He does, but he ain't got no proof. No witnesses that we bribed any players to throw games.
Wrong, Keller. Most of the players are honest, and they reported your girlfriend's attempt to bribe them.
That don't prove she was acting for me.
And she ain't talking, are you, baby?
Brad, let Mr. Wilson go. I won't talk. I swear I won't talk if you'll let him go.
Isn't the Pocahontas?
Shut up, Shiv. What's your angle on this, Wilson?
Helping the police smash your dirty racket, Keller.
Yeah?
Yes. But at the moment, I'll settle for persuading you to take a criminal conspiracy rap before you get involved in murder.
Who's gonna get murdered?
You're going to have to kill this girl. And perhaps me to keep this sports fix under wraps.
Oh, yeah, Wilson? How much do you want to keep your mouth shut?
I couldn't keep it quiet if you offered me $1 million.
Why not?
Because I've already notified the police. Callahan of Homicide is on his way here.
He's lying, Brad. He's playing this alone for a scoop in his lousy Illustrated
that
Press.
That notion has burned smarter crooks than you, Shiv. Call Switchboard if you don't believe Callahan is notified. And you're both caught in this rat trap.
He's lying, stolen. Let me take him a little for a ride.
Shut up, Shiv. You interest me, Wilson. What's the deal?
You'll have to make your deal with the prosecutor, Keller. And I'll bet you he'd trade your state's evidence for a short term if you'll throw in this knife-slinging rat.
on the attempted murder of Willie the Weep.
Why, you dirty, lousy, nosy...
Wilson's got something.
You loused this play.
Oh, yeah? Well, this knife says you're not gonna sell me up the river.
You knife-slinging rat! Rat! Wilson. Wilson, Shiv's knife.
Mr. Wilson. Mr. Wilson.
That's all, miss. That's all there is. I knew there was bad blood between them. Knew if I needled Keller and would deal, they'd revert to the criminal code of dog eat dog.
What will happen now? To me?
That'll depend on a judge and jury, miss. And how well you've learned the lesson that you can't play around the fringe of crime. It's all or nothing.
Boys! Hey, boys! What goes? Me and Miss Kilpine down here.
Just a minute, Harry. I'll unlock this door.
Steve.
Laurel.
I just got here and heard those shots. What happened?
Well, two crooks fell out and saved the state and the public a lot of trouble. Get on the phone, Lorelei.
Oh,
call sure. The press. We got Dusty Miller over here for a few photos captioned Exhibit A in the big book of crime that doesn't pay.
And so ended another racket-smashing adventure in the newspaper career of Steve Wilson, Lorelei, and his associates of the Big Town Illustrated Press. Now, before hearing about next week's Big Town adventure, here are Steve Wilson and Lorelei to tell you about the contest of a lifetime.
Friends, this is your chance to win the vacation of a lifetime. Would you like to explore Paris and London, see Cairo, visit Honolulu and other famous foreign cities? Then enter Lever's sensational $50,000 travel contest.
Just imagine, friends, you can win a round-the-world trip for two with all travel expenses paid, or choose $10,000 in cash.
Yes, and there are second prizes, too, 15 of them, with an all-expense trip to Europe for each winner, or $2,500 cash, plus 400 other prizes of $10 each. It's easy to enter. Here's all you do. Finish this statement in 25 words or less. I like Bath-Size Lifebuoy because. Send each entry with a box front from Bath-Size Lifebuoy to Lever Tour the World Contest, Box 1, New York 8, New York. That's Box 1, New York 8, New York. Only residents of continental United States, Alaska, and Hawaii are eligible. Free entry blanks with complete rules are now at your store. Next week, the makers of Lifebuoy bring you another hard-hitting racket exposé captioned Murder in the Snow, another exciting assignment in the newspaper career of fighting editor Steve Wilson of Big Town. Don't miss it. In tonight's dramatization, all names, times, and places are fictional. Big Town features Edward Pauley as Steve Wilson, Fran Collin as Lorelei Kilburn, and was written and produced by Jerry McGill. And if you'd like to see what the cast of Big Town are really like, read the February issue of Radio Mirror magazine for an exciting story about Big Town, complete with pictures. And next Tuesday night, same time, same station, you'll hear the newsboy calling.
Extra, extra, hear all about it. Steve Wilson in the headline story of Murder in the Snow, brought to you by Lifebuoy Health Soap, another fine Lever product. Extra, extra.
New Rinso with Solium puts sunshine in your wash. Yes, rain or shine, new Rinso gives your wash an amazing new brilliance. You can dry your wash anywhere, and white clothes will turn out not just whiter, but whiter than new, and washable colors even brighter than brand new. It's because new Rinso contains the scientific sunlight ingredient, Solium. New Rinso is so safe for clothes, so kind to hands. Today, more women use Rinso than any other wash day soap in the world. Only new Rinso contains Solium.
Be sure and be with us again next Tuesday at the same time when Lever Brothers Company will again present Big Town. This is your narrator, Dwight Weiss, bidding you good night.
This is NBC, the national
The Columbia Workshop. This evening we bring you an original treatment of one of America's most fabulous historical characters, Timothy Dexter. The radio dramatization of this amazing man is the work of a newcomer to the workshop, Charles Monroe. And now, the true story of Timothy Dexter, Cold to Newcastle. The opening scene, heaven. Heaven on a warm, sunny day in this year, 1940.
Hello, mister. Take a seat on this cloud. Make yourself comfortable.
Thanks, I will. Hey, I never thought it got this hot up here in heaven.
Well, why shouldn't it be hot up here in heaven, being so near the sun? Say, you must be new here.
Yes, I came just a few days ago, Mr.
My name's Dexter. Timothy Dexter.
Yes, glad to know you, Mr. Timothy Dexter. You've been up here in heaven long?
Oh, just about 150 years.
Say, isn't that the angel Gabriel over there blowing that trumpet?
Yeah, that's Gabriel.
Must be something awfully wrong down on Earth to make Gabriel blow his trumpet.
Oh, no. Gabriel doesn't blow his trumpet just for cracks of doom. I imagine he's blowing it because he sees me talking to somebody, just to remind me.
Aren't you supposed to be talking to me?
Oh, Gabriel don't mind. He's just blowing because he's supposed to sound warnings whenever people try to ease around the truth.
Oh, are you given to easing around the truth?
Me? Oh, my, no. Well, maybe I am a little. I seem to keep Gabriel pretty busy. That's why he flaps on his trumpet like that. He's tired from listening to me. I don't care what he thinks. He does flat. All right, Gabriel. You don't flat. How's things down on Earth, mister?
Oh, not so good, not so bad.
Ain't changed much. What town are you from?
Newburyport, Massachusetts.
You come from Newburyport, Massachusetts? Why, so did I.
What'd you say your name was again?
Timothy Dexter.
Heavens around us. Are you that Timothy Dexter, that screwball?
What's a screwball?
Why, sure, I've heard of you. You're the fellow who sent coals to Newcastle and made a fortune.
Yeah, that was me.
All my life I've heard of you. You're a legend.
I am not a legend. I actually lived. Very few people give a Superman like me credit for ever having lived.
A Superman? Were you being a Superman when you sent those shiploads of coal to Newcastle because you didn't know any better?
I did, too, know better. All right, all right. Drat that Gabriel. Maybe I didn't know any better. But, mister, they told me that Newcastle was the coal center of the old world. So I figured they needed coal in Newcastle, and I didn't know that they shipped it. But when my boats got there, there was some trouble. No boats were available, so they took my ships and cargo at a handsome profit to myself.
Well, that's a mistake anyone could overlook.
It wasn't a mistake. Oh, well, maybe it was a tiny one. Though don't let me hear you say my buying those Continental dollars was all a mistake.
I never quite got that clear about you buying those Continental dollars, Timothy Dexter. You know, they still have a saying down there on Earth. It isn't worth a Continental.
Well, that just shows what fools people are. Just like they used to think me a fool, even though I made several fortunes. I was born in Malden, Massachusetts in 1743. After the war against England, when our country won its independence, I moved to Newburyport because it offered a better chance for my business, which was leather dressing and dealing in hides. Well, one day, shortly after General Washington became our first president, I was in my shop, working busily at something or other, when my good wife, Martha, came in.
Timothy? Timothy Dexter, why don't you work nearer the window? You'll hurt your eyes working in that dark corner.
My eyes are as good as any man's.
How do you know your eyes are as good as any man's? Now, move up closer to that front window.
Now, that's a fine thing for a wife to be saying of her husband. How does he know that his eyes are as good
as any... Very well, then. You can use your eyes to find me some money. I must be going to the marketplace for some flour.
Well, how much money, Martha?
There, I knew it. You have no money.
I have, so. Look in my tin box there.
There's no need to look. I know there's naught but that worthless continental paper money in your box.
It holds several coins as well. Here, look for yourself. And don't call that continental money worthless.
It's not worth the paper it's printed on. Everyone says so.
Everyone says so. Do you not take your husband's word against everyone says so?
Morning, Timothy. Morning, Marty.
Come in, Nat Hawkins.
Well, thank you, Timothy.
Nat Hawkins, you go right back where you came from.
What?
Wherever you came from, go right back. I don't want you troubling Timothy in the daytime. Heaven knows you trouble him enough at night, keeping him down at Thad Green's tavern, drinking till all hours.
Well, now, this is a fine how-do-do. What's the trouble with Marty, Timothy?
Martha isn't feeling well, Nat.
I feel very well. Except when I look at the contents of this tin box of yours, Timothy Dexter. I suppose it was you, Nat Hawkins, who put Timothy up to saving continental dollars.
Well, did you say continental dollars, Marty? Did you say that Timothy was saving continental?
The fool.
I am not a fool.
Oh, saving continentals. Well, I never heard the like of that. Saving continentals, he is, eh?
You'll see. You'll see, both of you. Mr. Hamilton declares Congress will back the Continentals.
Mr. Hamilton? Well, can Mr. Hamilton force the Congress to back worthless bits of faded paper? No, sir. People want to feel a real gold and silver in the palm.
Aye, Nat. For once, I side with you. I'd like the feel of a silver piece in my hand this minute.
I don't care. I'm going to save my Continentals. And then when the Congress backs them, you'll see.
Oh, do you honestly believe Congress will do that, Timothy?
You heard me just declare it.
Say, You wouldn't be wanting more Continentals, would you, Timothy?
Certainly I would. I wish I had every Continental in Newburyport.
Timothy!
I wish I had every Continental in Massachusetts.
Timothy! Shut your foolish mouth.
I wish I had every Continental in New England, I do. You shut your mouth, wife.
Oh. Well, Timothy, I'd be very pleased to sell you the few Continentals I possess.
Sell me yours.
Yes, yes. I've only a few at my lodgings, but I'll be pleased to sell them.
Nat Hawkins, you'll do no such thing. Now, you leave Timothy and me in peace.
Just a moment, my fine lady. Are you inferring I have no judgment in business? Are you inferring that your husband is a fool in money matters?
Aye, and in everything.
Well, I'll show you I will, Nat Hawkins. I'll give you a penny apiece for every Continental you possess.
A penny apiece for my Continentals? All right. Have the coins ready, Timothy. I'll be right back.
Oh, but Nat, come back. Nat. Why, he's gone.
Office stand ready. Have you heard? Nat Hawkins says Timothy Dexter is buying Continentals at a penny apiece.
What? Buying Continentals?
Yeah.
Timothy Dexter? Boys, that says old Timothy Dexter, the high dealer, is buying Continentals at a penny apiece.
What does Timothy want with them?
I don't know, but he'll buy them.
I have a dog on them at home.
My husband says Timothy Dexter's buying Continentals.
That he is. My brother sold Timothy 1,000 worthless Continentals only yesterday morning.
Dear me, think of his poor wife. I thought of her every single minute my husband was there selling Timothy our Continentals.
And what are you doing by the window? Looking for more people to send you their worthless paper?
It's not worthless.
I should say it isn't. Every Continental you've got's worth at least a penny. Every single penny we had in the world a week ago.
Was that all longer ago it was?
Hello? 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 Is anyone in the shop?
It's Lawyer Pickering.
Oh, here you are, Timothy Dexter. Good day to you, Mr. Dexter.
And what is it you wish, Lawyer Pickering?
Only a word with your husband, ma'am.
You're not going to take our shop from us?
I fear I must, Mr. Dexter. Your foolish husband's creditors have asked me to arrange for proper settlement. I have bills here owed to many merchants who ask that I obtain immediate payment or...
But I'll pay.
When, Timothy? And with what? Not with your Continentals, be assured of that.
But we have no other place to go. How can I earn money if I have no shop, no home?
You should have thought of that before your braggart tongue got you into trouble, Timothy.
Well, if you'll give me just a little more time,
What's that noise?
Wait. There's a crowd coming down the street.
Nat Hawkins is in the lead.
Sounds, Timothy. I see many of your creditors.
Maybe it's just more people with Continentals to sell me.
Timothy Dexter.
Send those people away, Nat Hawkins.
Timothy Dexter will buy no more Continentals.
No. Ain't you heard the news?
What news?
You're rich. Timothy's rich.
What?
Congress has voted to back the Continentals.
Well, I'll be switched.
What's that? Congress has voted to back the Continentals?
Yeah, a writer's just brought the news. Here, Timothy, stand up.
Paint in at a time like this.
Of course, mister, as I look back on it now, after almost 150 years, and since I've got the perspective a man gets up here in heaven, maybe I wasn't sure exactly when Mr. Hamilton would get Congress to back them Continental dollars, but I knew he would.
Pardon me, Mr. Dexter, but wasn't that Gabriel's trumpet?
Sorry, Gabriel.
Was this before or after you sent those mittens to the tropic West Indies by mistake and made another fortune?
Mittens? Hey. Are you sure you're not thinking of the shipment of warming pans I sent to the West Indies?
Oh, yes. I heard about the warming pans back down there on Earth. How'd you ever come to do that?
Well, I'll tell you about it, mister. Because it kind of explains why I sent the mittens down later. After the deal in the Continentals turned out so favorably, I become somewhat of a gentleman of leisure. And one morning, some months after, I was strolling down the street.
Good morning, Timothy.
And a very fine morning it is, Isaac Morris. How's your trade these days?
Not so good, Timothy. It's very poor. A fine stock I got, but no fine buyers.
Indeed. I'm sorry to hear that, Isaac Morris. But things will take a better turn soon, I'm certain. Of course, I've been making a fortune myself, but even so, these are arduous times, I must admit.
You have been very lucky, Timothy.
Lucky? You can't call good judgment being lucky.
Yeah, then I wish I had your good judgment.
Well, it isn't given to every man to be born with good judgment, such as mine. Have you suffered misfortune through your judgment, Isaac?
Yeah, Timothy. I had the very bad judgment to buy a large stock of warming pans, which I cannot sell.
Warming pans?
Yes.
Well, come wintertime and everyone in Newburyport will need a warming pan in his bed.
But winter is further away than my creditors.
Are they good warming pans, I think?
Oh, I would buy nothing but the very best warming pans. Come with me, Timothy. Let me show you a sample in my storehouse.
Well, I have a little leisure. I'll come with you and look them over, Isaac. I may be able to offer you a bit of advice.
Good evening, Timothy.
Good evening, Fan.
Don't you like the ale in my tavern? How'd you become a rich man, Timothy?
The ale's quite satisfactory, Fan.
You haven't touched a drop of it, that's clear.
I'm not well tonight, Fan.
Perhaps it'd be wise if you went home. Slept a long night through, Timothy.
I don't want to go home, Fan. In fact, Fad, Mistress Dexter has forbidden me to come home.
Forbidden you?
Aye. Forbidden me. Despite the riches I've but recently laid at her feet, she unjustly accuses me of mistaken judgment.
But it couldn't be Continentals you're buying again. Everybody knows their value now.
'Tis warming pans I bought.
Warming pans?
Aye. I bought a vast quantity of warming pans, only to discover that everyone in the state of Massachusetts has a warming pan. Is very unjust.
Aye, very unjust. Well, if I didn't have a warming pan at the present, I'd buy one of yours, Timothy.
Thank you, Thad.
Yeah.
But it would be of small avail. I have half a shipload to be rid of.
Half a shipload? That's a thundering lot of warming pans, Timothy.
Yes, Thad.
Timothy, if I can help you sell those warming pans, will you divide the profits with me?
Yes, Thad.
Now, I got an idea, Timothy. A very good patron of my tavern, Captain Larson, owns a merchant vessel badly in need of more cargo before he can sail. Now, we might go to the docks and approach this Captain Larson with a proposition.
Calm seas, clear sky. No ill luck of any kind. Good fortune has pursued us, certainly.
Yes, Captain Larson.
What's wrong with you, man? Fine voyage and your face is downcast. Why don't you go ashore like the others? Enjoy the wine, the pretty girls.
Well, I remain behind on purpose, Captain Larson.
On purpose? Why, Amy? Why?
I have a fearful confession to make, Captain.
Confession? What is it?
Well, that night that Mr. Green and Mr. Dexter came to see you, Captain, while we were lying in port...
Mr. Green, Mr. Dexter, my partners, what of them?
Did you ever inquire of them what that cargo was?
Inquire? Why...
Well, if you recall, Captain, you were ill that night.
Yes. A bit under the weather, but not drunk enough... I mean, not ill enough, not to know an excellent arrangement when it was presented to me.
But do you know what the cargo is, Captain? It's warming pans.
Warming pans? Yes. Excellent. I dare say my good partners, Mr. Dexter and Mr. Green, dispatched us with a very fine grade of warming pans. Lord above us, did you say warming pans?
I said...
Warming pans? Warming pans? Those two scoundrels knowing I was going to the tropics.
I kept...
warming pans.
The nights are cool here in the West Indies, but not cool enough for warming pans.
Oh, I shall be the laughingstock of all the ports in the world. How can I explain how I happened to sign the cargo? How can I explain I was not myself? How did those conniving Yankees find me in that condition? When I get home, I'll have their lives for this. I'll see them lashed 100 times for every drop they poured down my gullet that night. I'll string them up, and then I'll walk them off.
Receive me, Timothy. Who can that be?
Well, if it should be Captain Larson returned, I'm in Boston.
Oh, you'll not be in Boston. You'll stay right here and face the music. I'll go to the door.
Are you Mistress Dexter's man?
I am, sir.
I'm Captain Larson, Mistress Dexter. I've come to see your husband. Oh, there you are, Timothy Dexter.
Now, Captain, let us discuss this peaceably.
Peaceably? Where's Thad Green?
He's in Boston with me.
Perhaps it would be better after that trick you played on me.
I played no trick. I played no trick, Captain.
Don't thrash him too hard, Captain Larson. Neither he nor that numbskull, Thad Green, knew the West Indies was in the tropics until I told him so.
You didn't know the West Indies was in the tropics? I can play the angry man no longer, Timothy Dexter. I sold every one of those warming pans.
Sold them?
In the tropics?
Aye, and at a handsome profit to all of us.
Those warming pans?
I sold them to the black boys as molasses ladles.
Molasses ladles? That's the story of Timothy Dexter sending warming pans to the tropics.
You certainly are the luckiest man I ever heard of, Mr. Dexter. So it was warming pans. And here I thought it was mittens.
Oh, it was. It was mittens.
Huh?
I sent them down so the workers wouldn't get molasses on the hands.
But, mister, they didn't care whether they got their hands covered with molasses or not.
Oh, so that's one deal you got stung on, Timothy Dexter.
Oh, I didn't lose on that deal. The captain in charge of my cargo of mittens sold them for a nice, fat profit to the captain of a vessel returning to Scandinavia.
Well, I'll be...
Careful, mister. Remember, you're in heaven now.
Oh, excuse me.
Well, after the warming pans and the mittens, I went into shipbuilding. Had a very interesting experience almost the first month I was a shipbuilder, too. Of course, I didn't build the ships myself. I commissioned a friend of mine, Master Prouty, to build my ship. But one morning, I...
Unless I have more stay stuff at once, we'll have to cease work on your ship there.
Is stay stuff important to my ship, Master Prouty?
Important? Why, it's the very heart and soul of a ship.
Then buy what stay stuff you need, Master Prouty. I'll foot the bills.
Stay stuff's very expensive these days, Mr. Dexter.
Money is no consideration. I want the finest ship on the Seven Seas.
Well, I only wanted your approval, Mr. Dexter. I'll order the stay stuff at once. Now, would you like to see how the work on the ship is progressing?
Aye. Please go away, Master Prouty. Please go away.
Aye, Timothy? What is it now?
Marvey, what's stay stuff?
Stay stuff? Why, everyone knows what stay stuff is.
I didn't. It was only this morning.
Well, everyone with an ounce of brains knows it's used in corsets.
Corsets? In corsets?
Timothy, what tricks have you been up to?
Why, Martha, I only asked. Stay stuff is used in shipbuilding, too.
A likely story.
What exactly is stay stuff, Martha?
Whalebone.
Whalebone. Whalebone. Any scarce?
What is it? Oh, the price was very low last week when I had occasion to purchase some.
Aha!
Why do you say aha?
Martha, I have an idea. I'm going to buy up all the whalebone, all the state stuff I can. I'm going to buy up all the whalebone in New England. And in another week, I'll control all the whalebone around. They won't be able to build a ship without coming to me.
Warehouses are filled with whalebone.
Stay stuff. Is he going to put ships in corsets?
Or beams in his wife's underclothing?
Say, Fate is almost penniless, he is again.
Why, Fate has caught him at last. Such fortune as he is, it's not for a good for a man.
And his wife standing there with a face this long.
I should say, Timothy Dexter, for a long time that should.
Oh, Mrs. Pettyjohn, the funny things you say.
The most beautiful woman here at the governor's ball tonight.
Ah, Monsieur Farquhar, you are too kind. You Americans have already learned it is polite to say pretty compliments, yes?
I am sincere, Mademoiselle de Goncourt.
I thank you, monsieur. I understand, Monsieur Farquhar, you are the leading merchant in New York.
Now it is you who flatter me, Mademoiselle. Mademoiselle, not only as a merchant, but as an admirer, may I compliment you upon your gown?
Oh. Thank you, monsieur.
Is that the fashion in Paris now, mademoiselle?
Oui, monsieur. I bought it in Paris just before I sailed for America. The very finest ladies of France wear this new fashion now.
And the, pardon, mademoiselle.
Yes?
The effect that the, bodice is maintained by,
Monsieur inquires, as a, merchant?
Mademoiselle.
Ah, now I shall not tease you, monsieur. The effect, as you call it, it is maintained, as you express it, by, how do you say it? By the bones of a whale.
But we must have it, Hemsley. It is a new fashion in Paris now. To make that kind of gown, we must have whalebone.
But there is none available, sir. The entire supply has been bought up by a Newburyport merchant named Timothy Dexter.
Dexter? Does he run a dressmaking establishment?
I don't know, Mr. Parker, but this Dexter seems to have a complete hold on the supply.
Oh, if I could but persuade this Dexter to allow me to purchase part of his supply.
Shall I write to him, sir?
Write? No! I'll take the fastest coach that I can to Newburyport. I'll plead with this Dexter until I have persuaded him. If I have to go on my knees...
Now that you've heard some of my other adventures while on Earth, I don't have to tell you that I made another tremendous fortune from the whalebone.
I never heard such tales in my life, Mr. Dexter.
Neither did I. Why, if they hadn't happened to me, I don't think I'd even believe them. But they did. They did. Every single thing I've been telling you on this cloud actually took place down there on Earth some 150 years ago in Newburyport, Massachusetts.
Did you have any more adventures after this last one?
A few, but not in the same high class as these others. After I made that fortune in whalebone, I built me a big house in Newburyport.
What was it like?
Oh, it was beautiful. Beautiful. Colonial. With minarets and gold balls all over the roof.
That must have been something.
And I became a collector. I collected wood statues. At one time, I had as many as 40 statues in my yard, all of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson, and four lions besides.
But finally, you died.
Which time?
Well, you didn't die more than once, did you?
Well, first time I died, I didn't die.
I beg your pardon?
You're no more confused than the people that come to my first funeral. You see, I held a mock funeral.
Whatever for?
Well, it was my wife, Martha, forced me to it. After all that money I made for her, she still maintained I was only a lucky fool. And when I told her how lucky she was to be married to a splendid businessman like myself, she just sniffed. Just sniffed. So I held a funeral for myself to see if she really cared for me. Stood in the top story window to see how hard she cried.
Did she cry hard enough to satisfy you?
Oh, yes. But she cried for a week when I came back to life.
But you finally did die, didn't you?
Oh, yes, I died at last. Quite by accident. I drank myself to death.
What? You admit it was an accident?
Yeah. The first mistake I really ever made.
The Columbia Workshop has just brought you an original piece entitled Coal to Newcastle by the well-known radio writer Charles Monroe. This was Mr. Monroe's first contribution to the workshop. Mr. Orth Bell played the part of Timothy Dexter, John Gibson, the man, Esther Sondergaard, Martha Dexter, Parker Fenley, Nat Hawkins, Joe Latham, Captain Larson, Vicky Vola, Marie, Peter Donald, Pickering, Maurice Franklin, Barkar. Also included in the cast were Elsie May Gordon, Robert Strauss, and Roy Fant. The entire production was under the direction of Brewster Morgan. The producers of the Columbia Workshop requested that for the next 2 weeks, because of special broadcasts, no workshop programs will be heard. But the present series will be resumed at this same time, 3 weeks from tonight, February 22nd. Remember the time and date, 10:15, Thursday, February 22nd. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. Hope you enjoyed these episodes. If you want to hear more from Big Town, more from Columbia Workshop, just visit the website, relicradio.com. Search for them. Available episodes will show up there. You'll also find links there to everything else Relic Radio and our donate button. If you'd like to help support this and all the shows, you can do so from the website. Thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show. Relic Radio Show is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.